Good afternoon, Amber Louise Temple Morfin Layson. Welcome on VH Berries.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
I am extremely grateful because each of your creation is not just a release, but a groundbreaking event in itself. How are you doing today?
Well, after that introduction, I'm doing great. Can you come in every day and just say that when I wake up? That'd be brilliant.
Absolutely. And I'm going also to add something, which is that the world is watching. Temple Morfin Layson at dinner, at lunch, and also at breakfast. And I believe that you know exactly where I am heading to.
Maybe.
I would love Amber Temple Morfin Layson to discuss about one of your first projects called Antonio's Breakfast. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Oh, Antonio's Breakfast was the moment I realized I wanted to tell longer stories, human stories. And, you know, the script was sent to me, and I produced Antonio's Breakfast, and the script was sent to me, and I read it, and I met with the director, and I, you know, I fell in love with it. And that was my first journey into going from shorter format, which is what I'd worked on in, you know, commercials photography is my other love. So that's why it was always kind of like these minute moments. And then Antonio's Breakfast was kind of my stepping into, a more narrative world, and telling stories. And I realized after that one that I was hooked. You know, and we were very lucky because people recognized, that it was a very powerful story and a very important story. So that was my first step into, say, dangling my toes into storytelling on screen.
Absolutely. Amber Temple Morfin Layson, this piece of art called Antonio's Breakfast was your first step into production, but also it raised your interest for your upcoming filmmaking career. And to come back to that very powerful storyline, this short film is telling the story of Antonio's and his friends, because this character is forced with a lot of dilemmas. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you remember from the guilt and uncertainty feelings that this short film is giving us?
Well, I think to contradict you, less about guilt and more about, you know, the responsibility placed on a youngster, a teen, that doesn't necessarily have the facilities to deal with it yet. And then social pressure and all of those things that we forget that a lot of youth have to deal with. So, you know, seeing it through his eyes, he was a very special boy, it's heartbreaking, what sometimes our kids have to go through for us.
In addition to those very powerful emotions, you mentioned, Amber Temple Morfin Layson, that you produced this short film, and at a certain time you got the script in front of you. What made you choose and pick that particular story?
It was very human. Yeah, it was very human and very powerful. And you never know why stories come to you, but that was the first moment where I realized I had to tell that story. And there was a great team involved, and you know, there were very, very many reasons, but it was just, it was like a calling. So, you know, I always say stories come to you, they find you. And that was a great lesson in how that happens.
Absolutely, Amber Temple Morphine Layson. And on the other side of that story, I also believe that this moment of the day, which is the breakfast, might be one of your favorites and something that is very important, especially in Great Britain.
They do love a good breakfast in Great Britain. You are correct. There's nothing like an English breakfast.
What would you say would be the Amber's breakfast?
Well, I'm a convert. I'm a burrito girl now. Give me a good burrito anytime. I had a little superstition, which is on the first day of filming any project, before we turn over, I have to have had my burrito before that first frame is kind of captured. So that's my own little superstition.
This is, as you just mentioned, Amber Louise Temple Morphine Layson, one of your superstition. And at that time, that short film was shot in a city called Brixton. And I think that if you return to that place right now, you might find your burritos, because there are a lot of restaurants, but also I counted 12 coffee shops that are very life-saving.
Oh yeah. It's all about the coffee. If you can't have decent coffee on the morning of a shoot, I mean, it's all going to go downhill from there.
Absolutely, Amber Temple Morphine Layson. And since the beginning of this conversation, I called you by your full name because you are right now writing a new chapter as a director, directing alone by yourself, in solo, if I can use that word, because you are also part of a duo that is known as Bert and Bertie. Can you tell us a little bit more about this signature and this adventure?
Well, interestingly, just after, because Antonio's Breakfast, we were lucky enough to win the BAFTA. And because of that, it started a lot of conversations. And one of the conversation, I think literally the morning after the BAFTA, because I had to go back and shoot, one of my clients on the shoot pitched me a story that she was writing. And I loved it. And let's just say I had the bug by then. So it seemed the natural thing to step into. And it was only when we were kind of pulling the project together that we both wanted to direct it. So, you know, being the producer that I am and realizing I wanted to direct, I was like, well, let's do it together. And that was literally the birth of Bert and Bertie, because everything happened really organically after that. Like, we were very creatively aligned and we both had different skill sets. So we kind of filled each other's gaps. But most importantly, you know, there weren't really examples of female directors, out in the world. So to do it together kind of felt like, you know, anything was possible. And, you know, for 16 years, it was like having, you know, someone there that was inside your head. And so we went on that journey together. But we came up with Bert and Bertie because we started calling each other nicknames. And it made the crossover from producing to directing easier, that it was just kind of this new kind of, not character, but this new persona. So that was kind of a very natural step into directing under another name, poking fun at the male auteur, you know, with men's names. And weirdly, it actually, people thought we were men until they met us. So we'd come over to, it's true. We'd come over to America and we'd walk into a meeting and they'd be like, they'd actually say it, "You're a woman." And we're like, "We know." but what it meant was, weirdly, what it meant was they viewed our work and our short films as though we were men. So it was never a question about, well, you know, can Jane do it? Can Jane handle this? It was like, I love that work. I want to meet them. And it very weirdly, only when we started coming to meetings did we realize that this is how women were being treated. This is how female directors were being seen in the industry. So it did a very interesting thing, and it played with that dynamic of the acceptance of female directors and the female voice. So it was kind of a fun way to come at it. Weirdly, it wasn't our intention. But it was a very beautiful advantage that we then turned on its head to just talk about the issue of the voices that are out there, the lack of voices that are out there. So that's a very long way of saying that's where Bird and Birdie kind of started and how it came about.
It was Amber Temple Moore Finlayson, an advantage that you used, and not everyone is made to work as a duo, but this was not completely your case because you fitted very well in that workflow. Can you tell us a little bit more about the insights of working as a duo, for example, when it comes to, say, the word action and cut? You need to give me some of the secrets of that success.
Oh, well, if I tell you the secrets, I have to kill you. But what I can tell you, no, I take that back. I'm not going to kill you. How did we do it? We did a very unusual thing. We would alternate day on day. So one day I would be with the actors, and then the next day I would be with the camera. And it sounds insane, but, you know, our prep would be fiercely detailed. And so we always knew where we were going. We knew what we wanted to achieve with the story or the performances. And so what it actually ended up meaning is that person was with the actors could really be with them and not be pulled away to answer millions of questions that you had to. And then the other person would do camera, production design, costume. And so it became seamless, to the extent that, you know, the actors wouldn't have known who directed them one day to the next. And so it worked for us. It's very unusual. and it seemed to have worked for everyone else. But it was a fascinating experience, and it was fascinating to do it that way.
It was fascinating to do it that way. And if I understood correctly, Amber Temple Moore Finlayson, you were directing one day out of two, and you were doing a completely different thing on the day you were off the set.
Yes, correct. Well, on the set, because you're right there, obviously. You become, if you're with the camera, you become the other eye. You become the person that maybe the blocking isn't working, or maybe, you know, there's a part in the script that the actor kind of isn't finding, or one of us wasn't finding. And then you had this collaborator, you had this person there that, you know, growing up in the industry, it was really great to have that. Is to kind of have, it's almost like a security blanket, you know, it's like, is this working? Do I need to change anything? And as long as we were both open to that discussion, which we had to be, that then it was great because someone always had your back. So there was always another opinion that you trusted. So that's probably why it worked so well for us as we were growing up as directors.
Absolutely, Amber Temple Moore Finlayson. Someone else always had your back, and you always and oftenly were wearing hats.
Yes, we were. I have an extensive hat collection. This is the hat of the moment, but it's kind of fun because there's also something about, you know, when actors put on costumes, you know, they become their characters. And for me, it was always when I put my hat on the morning, it's like, I'm directing today. There was something about that I love. And more than that, even more importantly, if you're having a bad hair day, doesn't matter. No one can see it. So it's perfect.
It is perfect to always have a great hairstyle in any circumstances.
Thank you.
And I would love Amber Temple Moore Finlayson to discuss about your journey that started in a city called Johannesburg in South Africa. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Oh, I guess the short version is I was very lucky. I grew up on a farm outside of Johannesburg, very remote. So everything that was going on in the country at that time, you know, is I grew up during apartheid. As a child, I didn't know about it. And my parents were, you know, really great in that way because of their kind of beliefs in human beings rather than what the color of your skin is. We grew up very protected, and we grew up very protected from what was going on. The first time that I actually knew about apartheid was when we had moved into the suburbs, so off of the farm at 13. And then so growing up with that discussion, growing up realizing what had been happening in the country that I loved, and then finding out what I could do about that. And I think what ended up moving into filmmaking and storytelling was, how do we change the story to include everyone? You know, that's kind of what I learned from that experience, because, you know, I don't agree with what happened, very strongly don't agree. And one of the reasons I left was because I felt I could do more by being outside of that system and that changing system, and by changing the stories that we're telling, you know, on a global scale. And, you know, there's a version that I could have stayed and done that, but there's a version where I do that from the outside, and I do that by trying to tell stories that are inclusive and human and respectful and filled with humanity. So I think that really set me growing up there. Having the freedom of a childhood like that really set me on this course, and I'm incredibly grateful for it.
Absolutely. Amber Louise Temple Morfin-Layson, those early days in Johannesburg in South Africa definitely told you a lot about humanity, and a chapter that came after is the one in London.
Yes, it is.
Can you tell us a little bit more about those days moving from a continent to another one?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a very interesting, and what I've found out on this journey is, you know, leaving a country where I left with a lot of guilt for what happened for, you know, over 50 years, but also a guilt in leaving, feeling like a true outsider and wanting to just shake that. There was a part of me that wanted to shake that past that I came from. But actually what London taught me is that there are people in London from all over the world, but everyone has their own story, you know, and they're all trying to find out who they are. And what I realized about London was that my difference was my greatest strength. You know, being different, being from where I was from, I started out being ashamed of it. But actually what I learned over 20 years and learned as becoming a storyteller is that my difference is what makes me. And having been part of that is what makes me. And it's what helps me make my decisions these days when I'm choosing what kind of stories do I want to tell. You know, stories that have consequence and hope. You know, those two things, while also being hugely entertaining, so that lots of people will see them. So that growing up in South Africa directly informed who I found I was in London, and has led me, as we know, every step of our lives, every step of the way leads us where we are today. And so London gave me that opening up, the learning about the world, I was so in awe of the city and the history and the diversity of the people in London. It was unbelievable to me, and I'm so grateful that I ended up there. I ended up back there. My great grandmother was British, and I feel very fortunate that I had those 20 years that taught me about the scale of humanity and the diversity of people that I met and the different cultures and the conversations, and, you know, they directly inform the stories that I want to tell today. So I'm very grateful.
In definitive, Amber Temple Morfin-Layson, we could fit those 20 years of experiences in a silo.
We could fit 20 years into a silo. Yes. Well, actually, it's 300 years into the silo. And I'm so glad you said that, because going back now to do Silo season 2, DM me for spoilers. Just kidding. But going back there, as a solo director, and living in the area I used to live in when I lived there, and there's something really familiar, and it's like a warm hug going back to London and being reminded of you know, the people that I fell in love with in London, and being reminded that of all the different stories and everything that people are going through, and being as close as we are currently to the Ukraine war, and, you know, the activity around that. And I miss that about London. I deeply miss that about having lived in London. But going back there, working on such an incredible production, but also living in my old neighborhood and, you know, doing the things I used to do. It's the same me, but it's a different me. So I'm enjoying being there at the minute. Obviously, I'm not there right now because of the strike, which is incredibly important. But we'll be back there soon. And I'm really looking forward to going back. So fingers crossed it's soon that we come to some agreement on these strike deals.
It is you, but also a different you, in definitive. You are solo on silo.
Yes, I am solo on silo. I know. It really works, doesn't it, as a catchphrase? And you know, the stories they're telling on silo are stories that are relevant today about, you know, needing to be more aware as humans, and how do we maintain our humanity moving forward? You know, there's a lot of big questions that we're asking on Silo season 2, as we did in season 1, but there's a lot of greater conversations that are happening beyond what's on the script and what we shoot day to day, and I'm so grateful for that.
Absolutely, Amber Temple Moore Finlayson, there are questions, but also symbols. And we just mentioned just before the fact of storing 300 years of lifetime into a silo. What does the symbol of a silo means for you?
Well, we have this symbol in the silo, which is the Nautilus shell, the spiral shell, which is obviously echoed in the spiral of the staircase. It's a very feminine symbol. You know, the circle has always been more feminine. But the Nautilus shell is about the universe and the flow of the universe. So beyond the day to day, you know, trials and tribulations that our characters are going through, there's a greater femininity to the show that I haven't seen in many shows before, and so that Nautilus shell is something that we keep going back to. We keep using that symbol of the flow. Obviously season 2, a lot happens, but we will come back to the circle always in Silo.
It always come back to the cycle. Amber Temple Moore Finlayson, and one other project that is very close to your heart as the day of today is called Moxie. Can you tell us a little bit more about it, and also about the powerful symbol surrounding this idea of representation?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Moxie is one of those those projects that came to me. I say stories find you. It's my collaborator from Hawkeye, the writer, Heather Quinn. And it's on the surface, it's a superhero film. It's a lo-fi superhero like The Boys or like Deadpool. You know, she's got attitude. She's kick-ass. She's funny. She's got Moxie is what she's got. But as we, there was something about it that I can't put my finger on. I was like, why do we need to tell this story? And I always feel we need to have a reason to tell a story. Like, it's got to have some kind of consequence. So on its surface, it's hugely entertaining, fun, you know, romp through LA and through the world, and about this woman who is, you know, dealing with guilt from something that happened when she was at college, and then being picked out as this kind of hero and this symbol of the city. And the discussion is, well, she doesn't look like our hero. She doesn't look like we expected her to, because everyone else in the program are men. And what we discovered, not only is this important to have heroes that don't only look like one thing, but what I realized is there isn't a fun superhero film that's led by an African-American woman who's kick-ass and funny and has attitude and speaks her mind. And, you know, we've had other versions of it, but not the entertainment version. I'm like, why hasn't this happened? So I want, you know, Kiki Palmer, I'm so lucky, is playing Moxie, and she's just magnificent. And I want that. I want that representation. I want that this crazy ride to be for men and women, and no matter where you're from, just to enjoy the film. Just enjoy it. And what people will take away, whether they realize it or not, is that thing of either I haven't seen that, or I haven't seen someone like me up on screen doing that. So it's really important to tell this film. It has consequence in that way. It has a lot of hope. There's a powerful emotional drive through it. But at the end of the day, it's important, and it's an important human story to tell. So I couldn't be more excited about it. I hope, you know, into next year, we can move it forward. And also, I get to blow shit up. So it is a win-win situation.
It is a win-win situation. And in conclusion, you want that representation. Thank you very much, Amber Louise Temple-Moore Finlayson.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk about this stuff. It's great to talk about stories that we want to tell and get out into the world, but also stories that are important while being entertaining. Very important. But thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this.